Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Audio bandwidth for This Week in Tech is provided by Winamp for Android, the ultimate media player for your desktop and Android device, featuring wireless sync. Download it free at winamp.com/android. Video bandwidth for TWiT is provided by CacheFly at cachefly.com. This is TWiT, This Week in Tech, episode 276, recorded November 28th, 2010. Derp. This Week in Tech is brought to you by GoToMeeting. Improve your conference calls and keep everyone on the same page when you share your screen with GoToMeeting. For your free 30-day trial, visit GoToMeeting.com/TWiT. And by Carbonite Pro. With prices starting at $10 a month, all your Office PCs can be backed up safely and automatically. For a free trial and to learn more, visit CarbonitePro.com. And by Ford and the new 2011 Ford Edge. It grabs attention as well as it grabs the road and features available My Ford Touch to connect you to your vehicle in new and innovative ways. The 2011 Ford Edge. Drive one this week at a Ford dealer near you. It's time for TWiT, This Week in Tech, the show that covers the latest tech news. And joining us, we got a great cast. I'm really excited. From Toronto, Vancouver, wherever the hell you are, somewhere north of the border.
I'm in Toronto, Leo.
In Toronto, Amber MacArthur, the host of Net at Night, CommandN.TV, and a longtime friend, my former co-host on Call for Help. Hi, Amber.
Hi there. Good to see you.
Great to have you. Thank you for being here. I see right behind you, I see my face, Andy Walker's.
And yes.
We can't see it, but I know you're there on the right.
Yes, I am there. I also have one of your old books here, Leo, but I won't pull that out.
please. Also here, Dwight Silverman. Great to see you, Dwight.
Good to be here, Leo. Thanks for having me.
Houston Chronicle.
It's already been a lot of fun.
Yeah. The pre-show was a little different. We believe Andrew Barron of Rocket Boom is on his way. At least the last we heard, he was coming to the San Francisco Bridge. Now, we don't know what bridge that is, because there is no San Francisco Bridge. But if he was at the San Francisco Bridge, someday he'll be here.
He'll be there. I know he tweeted about it a couple of times. I don't know. Maybe he's living in a different time zone.
Well, there's a chair for him right there. Anywhere.
Excellent.
Yeah. He's in New York still doing Rocket Boom, I think, right?
Yeah, he sure is. He's doing Rocket Boom. He has Magma. We've talked to him about that on Net at Night. But as we were talking about just before the show, Know Your Meme, it has become such a huge internet hit. That's where they take all the latest internet memes and they really talk about how they happened and the history of the memes. And I think it's surpassed Rocket Boom as far as traffic.
Wow. It's kind of like Snopes for memes.
Yeah, it's very cool, actually. I've watched a lot of them, and it's always fun. You know, everything from David after dentist to all the different memes that we follow along. So they do a really great job of that.
You know, the Charlie Bit Me guy has a Twitter. I don't know. You know, you do one thing by accident, like David at the dentist, where just by accident a father tapes his son and didn't even really think that it was going to be a video others would see. He just didn't understand how to make it private on YouTube. Now it's got, I don't know how many tens of millions of views. He says, well over $100,000.
Oh, yeah. I mean, he's turned it into a full business,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah. And then the Charlie Bit Me, which is another great internet meme. They've got a Twitter feed. I mean, these are little kids. I don't think they're tweeting.
Probably not.
Yeah. Probably not. So there are some very, very big stories. And I think the biggest one, which is breaking right now, is WikiLeaks. I really don't know what to think of Julian Assange and the whole WikiLeaks thing. A lot of people I greatly respect, including Jay Rosen and of NYU, NYU, and Jeff Jarvis, who hosts our Twig show and is at CUNY in New York, both very esteemed journalists. Jeff's a journalist, but teachers of journalism and kind of arbiters of journalism say that WikiLeaks is great. Jay Rosen said it's the first multinational journalistic enterprise or non-national journalistic enterprise. Let me ask Dwight, because you're also a journalist, a practicing journalist. What do you think of WikiLeaks?
It's very intriguing. There are a lot of, obviously a lot of ethical questions involved there. The army private who gave the data to WikiLeaks that is, you know, being has been parceled out over time, obviously is in a lot of trouble as a result of this. You know, so far I kind of haven't seen anything that I think, this puts our nation at risk or puts any individuals at risk. And the WikiLeaks folks have said themselves that no one has been hurt as a result of the release of it. But, you know, it's I think government needs to operate transparently. You end up with questions of whether that's true in wartime and whether we are in wartime.
Think everybody agrees there have to be secrets.
Right. Right.
Of some kind.
And some of these are, you know, a lot of the stuff that I've seen, particularly in the New York Times story today, is kind of intriguing and embarrassing. And a lot of it also has already come out. So I'm not sure if, unless there's more there that we haven't yet seen and it hasn't yet been found. So far, I'm not seeing kind of the big threat that a lot of people think is there.
Well, and they did the right thing, at least with the initial release of releasing it first to true journalistic entities like the New York Times.
Yeah, that's how they've been doing it. Yeah,
letting them vet it first. That reminds me of the Pentagon Papers, which is something you and I grew up with, Dwight.
Right.
And I mean, equally embarrassing to the U.S. government, nevertheless, very, very important pieces of journalism and leaks, important. Now, the New York Times says that the releases so far have been kind of embarrassing to governments. The real question, I guess we'd all agree, we don't want something released that will cause people's lives to be lost, right?
Right.
Yeah,
and,
definitely.
And you don't know whether that will happen before, something is released. There may be something in here that, doesn't seem sensational, but could cause great harm because of a nuance that, say, the New York Times or anybody else going through it will miss. And what's interesting is that someone somewhere was trying to stop this with a denial of service attack earlier today. Obviously, they had already given the data to news organizations.
Yeah, you're blocking the wrong site. It's not taking down WikiLeaks isn't going to do anything. WikiLeaks, the cable archive is up right now. If you go to cable, at least as we do this show, cablegate.wikileaks.org, and this is where the secret U.S. Embassy cables are. Part of what protects them, I guess, is that there are so much data.
There's so much. That's one of the things, I mean, when you go through it and you look at the archives and how much information there actually is there, I was just kind of diving in earlier on today. I mean, most of it isn't going to mean a lot to the average person, I would say.
Right. Somebody said in the chat room, well, why are they only leaking U.S. stuff? Well, I think the point of WikiLeaks is everything, right? Not necessarily just U.S. stuff. They happen to have this treasure trove right now, but it's not the only thing WikiLeaks does.
Well, and in this case, it came from this private who downloaded... Right. Just a slew of documents all at once. And obviously he's going to get it from U.S. sources.
Yeah. And he was a soldier. So, right. I mean, you know, a number of people said on Twitter, treasonous, including government representatives. And you know, somebody I know, Adrian Lamo, who is a hacker, is the guy who turned him in. Lamo, As often the case with hackers, people often go online to boast in chat rooms and so forth. He discovered this guy and he turned him in, and he said he felt felt an obligation to do so. So there's really no clear point of view in any case from even the tech community on this.
I think, though, this is going to be just the beginning of what's going to be a bigger problem over the next few years, you know, with more people sharing more things electronically and people being able to find ways to access the information. I mean, it really goes to show you that it doesn't matter who you are. We live in a world where if you want something to be private, it's increasingly more difficult to actually protect that.
Right. That's where Jeff Jarvis, we love talking to him because he's the guy who says everything should be public. If it's all public, why, you know, then everything's okay.
Yeah, either do that, or if you're having conversations that are sensitive, then you don't write them in any type of document that's saved electronically, right?
Oh, indeed. And you don't go flying anywhere either. I think it's very interesting that the same time that this debate is going on over WikiLeaks, there's the debate going on over the scanners at the airports that the TSA have put in and the very personal groping that's going on. And there's dissent over that, too. Just as many people think it's fine. In fact, many of the major newspapers say, get over it. You know, be searched. Whereas if you read Twitter, there's nothing but anger.
Bruce Schneier has a really good piece on the fact that, you know, essentially what his point is that this is closing the barn door after the horse is out. You know, in each case, we have set up, according to him, a set of very technological attacks on an approach for harm that's already done. You know, we've got the body scanners in because of the underwear bomber, right?
Right.
But that's already happened. And so the terrorists try something new and come at us from another angle. And then, you know, we put in a block to that, but that's already happened.
Right.
And so, you know, Bruce essentially says that, you know, that's a complete waste of time and money. He said the two things that they've done that have been successful has been getting people to fight back and I forget the other one, but getting people to fight back is kind of is, you know, one of the prime things. And in the case of the shoe bomber and the underwear bomber, that's exactly what happened. People aboard the plane took over,
turned him in and said, "Hey, what you doing?" Right.
And he says that's security success.
I guess it is. Now, Bruce calls it security theater.
Right.
He says this is the appearance of security. Although, let's face it, that's not so bad. I saw another article. Somebody said, well, so what if it doesn't work? So what if it's theater? If it makes people feel safer when they fly and keeps people in the air, then that's a benefit.
Mm-hmm. I love how creative people are getting. I don't know if you guys have seen the guy in Colorado who invented the body scanner proof underwear. So funny. And then I think there's an underwear as well that you can actually see a message on it.
Yeah, it's metallic. It has the Fourth Amendment.
And then there's actually a pair that you can't scan through when
there's
you go through the scanner.
Now, yes. I think if you wore that word of warning, they're going to pull you aside and grope you.
You're going to get groped if you wear those.
Have you seen the bumper stickers? Can't see London, can't see France unless we see your underpants.
Oh, that's so funny.
Grope discounts available. These are TSA bumper stickers. If we did our job any better, we'd have to buy you dinner first.
I don't want to jump ahead, Leo, but I know we're going to talk about the Twitter account for the TSA, which is also
there's only one.
Weird and amusing.
There's only one, right? Now, there are a lot of fake Twitter accounts, but the TSA. What is the TSA Twitter account?
I think I have it here. Hold on 1 second. Open it
I'm
up
flying,
early.
I'm flying on Sunday. I'm flying to France. It'll be very, I don't know. I'm going to get the x-ray if I can. I don't want to be felt up.
Yeah. No. You want to get the badge, though, don't you, Leo? The Foursquare badge?
Yes, I will. By the way, that's awesome. I will. If you do a check-in from the airport, and you have to say, like, TSA groped me or something, and you get a special TSA, I've been groped badge. Oh, yeah.
Okay, so it's the TSA blog team. Yeah, I just found it as well. And I guess it's real, but I almost can't believe it. I don't know if you guys felt the same way.
Do you remember Blogger Bob? I think we talked about Blogger Bob on Twitter a few months ago. He was blogging for the TSA. Maybe poor guy. 10,000 people following TSA blog team. They talk here about the fake Twitter accounts. They say Happy Thanksgiving.
Mm-hmm.
TSA opt-out turns into TSA opt-in. That was the 24th. We talked about that too. That people were saying, "Oh, I'm going to get patted down." Nah, bad idea.
Yeah, the funny thing, if you read the
most
Gizmodo
of this is retweets.
Retweets.
Yeah.
But they go into, in the Gizmodo article, they go down through conversations that the TSA team blog has had with individuals talking to the TSA on Twitter. And this one woman is really angry and she sort of swears at the TSA. And the TSA blog team writes back and goes, UMM and dot, dot, dot. I mean, they just...
Oh, geez.
So strange.
It's just some intern they hired.
They write things like "no pie for you" when people don't like their. I mean, I don't know if I want to laugh or cry at some of these comments.
I think they hired some college kid. They said, "You know about social media? Yeah. Okay. Can you do our Twitter? We need somebody on the Twitter."
And there's all these smiley faces. I don't know. I mean, I guess I want the TSA to have a more stable appearance or more serious appearance on Twitter.
Well, should they have an appearance at all on Twitter?
Well, I think they can, but I think they need to sort of decide who they're going to be there. Like right now, if you look at the tweets that have been highlighted on Gizmodo, they're really just having a lot of fun with different messages, and they have like cute little jokes. I don't consider airport security funny.
Apparently, they don't either. Go ahead and try those jokes at the airport. See how they feel.
Exactly. Right. Yeah, good point.
Actually, the TSA has a really useful feed where they tweet the waiting times at security locations for various airports.
Oh, that's good.
And that's actually useful.
Yeah.
That's the kind of thing they should be doing.
Yeah. I mean, Amber, you know, you wrote the book Power Friending. I presume it's your opinion that every company should every government agency be on Twitter?
I'm not sure every government agency needs to be on there, but I do think if you're going to be on there, you need to decide that you're going to kind of extend your image to people, you extend your brand. And I would say the TSA isn't, you know, this fun, light brand, and nor should they be. And so to go to their Twitter account and see them having a lot of fun, like you said, if you went to through security and you try to do the same thing, you're going to end up there for a lot longer. You're going to miss your flight. So I think they need a bit of an overhaul and kind of need to rethink their presence there, because it's very... It's kind of cute, but I think at the end of the day, we don't want cute for our airport security, right?
Yeah, not me. So let's move on. And there are other stories, including the federal government. Apparently, ICE, which is a division of Homeland Security, shutting down not terrorist sites violating copyright, including torrentfinder.com. If you go to these sites, you'll find a big... logo of the Department of Homeland Security saying, pending a criminal investigation, the site is shut down. Is this the beginning of what has been promised from the federal government and using ICANN, which is ostensibly an international, well, it's a U.S. organization, but it really represents the international internet, using that to... basically to support an agenda that is, the copyright holders, the agenda of the RIAA and the MPAA.
Well, I'm curious about what the due process was in this. I mean,
they say they had a
court order.
Court order. Yeah.
But the people who have been quoted who own these domains indicate that they have been given no notice of this. Apparently, they're going directly to DNS and changing it over. But shouldn't the owners, the people who hold the domains, who want them, you know, directed through specific DNS locations, shouldn't they be notified? It almost seems like there's some kind of violation there of due process.
This domain name, not the site, not the hardware, this domain name has been seized by ICE, Homeland Security Investigations, pursuant to a seizure warrant issued by the United States District Court. What is the crime? Willful copyright infringement.
I just don't, it's not going to stop people, you know, I can't see people going there and saying, oh, okay, you know what, I see this message and I'm going to stop trying to get copyrighted materials online. I know in Canada, for example, I think we're one of the top nations as far as pirating music and movies and television shows. And one of the reasons is we just don't have access to some of that content. We can't buy a lot of TV shows and movies on iTunes, like compared to the US, for example. And so there is this huge demand to be able to go online and get access to this.
Yeah.
So Amber, you can't get it, and if people are going to do it anyway, does that mean that the federal government of either country should not try to enforce it?
Well, I think they should try to enforce it. I just don't think it's going to stop it. So I agree. You know, they have they definitely need to do something about it, I guess, in their minds. But I don't think it's going to have a major effect on people out there who are trying to find these different files. There's just too many other places to go. So in some ways, I think they should try. But I just don't see it as being time well spent, I guess I could say. I don't see an end to it.
Well, and I have a problem because I think that it raises much larger issues because this is a fairly heavy-handed way to do it. And it really is impacting the free flow of the internet to steal the domain name and to use the fact that ICANN is a arm of the Commerce Department in the United States. See, I think, you know, there are a lot of countries who've said, we don't want the U.S. Commerce Department running the global internet. Well, doing this kind of thing is exactly underscoring what they're saying. Basically, to defend American interests, they're breaking the internet.
And these sites have taken and moved to different domains that aren't under the control of ICANN. One of them moved to a .info domain. And so it kind of takes it out of the realm of what the U.S. could do with it. But I'm very interested, and I hope that in the next few days as this develops, that we get to see exactly what the due process was and how this was determined. I mean, as far as I know, there has been no trial. There's been no indication of what they did to determine that these sites are primarily copyright infringement. Now, Some of them, I understand, from based on the domain names themselves, or, you know, it's obvious that that's what they're trying to do, but not all of them do that. Not all the content that's flowing through them is copyrighted or not for distribution.
Well, and that's what why the torrent finder issue is particularly challenging, right? Because, in fact, it's just iframes. And the guy who runs it from Egypt. So, you know, this really doesn't sound right. It doesn't sit right. It really bugs me. Especially when I read quotes like this. This is John T. Morton, Assistant Secretary of ICE, saying American business is under assault from counterfeiters and pirates every day, 7 days a week. Criminals are stealing American ideas and products and distributing them over the internet. And there's also a bill which is currently making its way through Congress. I don't know how you pronounce it, COICA, the Combating Online Infringements and Counterfeits Act, which the EFF has says is basically an internet censorship bill. The operator of Torrent Finder says, my website does not even host any torrents or direct link to them. I'm sure something is wrong. He says his server is still up and running at a different address. And it may be running outside the U.S. I don't know. I mean, I'm not sure. I guess ICANN could, in fact, block it worldwide if they should choose to.
You know, I didn't realize, I don't know if you guys know more about this, but I didn't realize what a big issue cyber squatting is for many big companies out there. And I don't want to take this too far off track, but I work with a client right now who makes these great big down parkas. The name of the company is Canada Goose. And there are so many companies right now in China who are squatting on names that sound like Canada Goose and selling products that look exactly like their products for like a quarter of the price. And with Canada Goose, there's a bit of a struggle right now to even show up in Google results because they're so advanced as far as understanding SEO and how to get to the top of Google search results. I think that that's such an interesting thing happening online right now too, although obviously very negative and hurting a lot of companies as far as sales.
Well, speaking of SEO, we're going to take a break and come back, and I want to talk about Decor My Eyes, which is a very interesting study in gaming Google. And the big New York Times article today about this site, I think it should. Now, see, to me, this should be blocked for the bad Jackson Brown pun. Just forget the rest of it. It's just a bad, bad name. Decor My Eyes. Thank goodness I'm not running ICANN. Before we get to that, though, and I think it's a really interesting story, I want to talk a little bit about our friends at Citrix and the great go-to meeting, which is a really great service for people who don't want to travel but need to meet with people around the world. You know, a lot of times it's nice to meet face-to-face, but frankly, who can afford to do it all the time? Nobody can, and nobody's got the time, the money, not to mention the stress of flying these days. This is why GoToMeeting is hotter than ever. GoToMeeting lets you have a conference call that's as good as a in-person meeting because of the visual aspect that GoToMeeting adds. It's very simple. You can install it right now free for 30 days. Just put it on your machine. Very lightweight, won't you know, occupy much space or bother you in any way until you're ready to have a meeting. Then you can do it ahead of time, send out an Outlook invitation or an email with a link, or even while you're on the phone with somebody, say, hey, go to meeting.com. I just started a meeting. This is the ID. They enter in that 9-digit number. Suddenly, without any software on their side, they download it. It takes 30 seconds, and suddenly they're seeing your computer on their screen. You can show them the PowerPoint, the keynote, because it's Mac as well as PC. You could show them the drawings, the spreadsheets, the websites. You can collaborate together. You could even, you know, give them control of your machine for training or vice versa. Very easy to install. Try it right now for 30 days. GoToMeeting.com/twit. G-O-T-O meeting.com/twit. Once you've installed it, just have a meeting. By the way, there's a great iPad app out too for GoToMeeting. Makes it really fun to have meetings out in the backyard. As long as you've got Wi-Fi, it's fantastic. GoToMeeting.com/twit. So you I'm sure you've read this New York Times article today about Decor My Eyes.
Yeah, definitely.
Amazing story. Amazing. I just went to the website and look at this. Your feedback is important to us. Would you be willing to give us a one-minute feedback? I don't know if I want to even click a link on this site. It makes scare. It's terrifying.
I was reading that story.
Yeah.
And the writer talks about going to the owner of the website, his house in Brooklyn. And he's sitting there and having this conversation with the guy. And he paints such a wonderful picture of what this guy is like. And as a reporter, you can feel him as he's talking to him. He's thinking to himself, this is a great story. This is a great story. This is a great. It's, I'm surprised the reporter didn't explode.
He said,
I know that feeling.
I have struck gold.
Oh, yeah.
You know, he said,
I mean, it's the reason why it runs on for what? It's like 6 pages.
It is. 7 pages. Very long story.
7 pages on the New York Times website. It's a great story.
David Segal, a bully finds a pulpit on the web. He even had a good title. So basically, it starts off with the story of one Claribel Rodriguez, who typed the name of an eyeglass brand, a frame, into Google. The very first site that showed up right at the top of the page was this decormyeyes.com. And now, because she said, because it was the number one, not a paid ad, but the number one search result, she clicked on it. They had the LaFont frame she wanted. So she ordered them. It was the start, this is the New York Times, of what Ms. Rodriguez would later describe as one of the most maddening and miserable experiences of her life. She got counterfeit frames. She got overcharged. The guy threatened her. The guy took pictures of her house and said, I know where you live. When she asked to have the credit card charge returned, the credit card company said, okay. Then the guy called him, posing as her, got it turned around. She called the credit card company. She said, well, take it up with him. But the funniest thing is, this guy loves the bad publicity because it gives him Google juice.
It's unbelievable. I cannot believe this story. I just can't imagine, you know, people who are finding this company that they're actually going to go and spend money even after reading all of these reviews.
Well, not so anymore.
Yeah, well, it gives him Google juice. The reality is it's short-lived as far as his popularity online, and I mean, it's not really a long-term strategy to continue to do well.
So the reporter talked to Danny Sullivan, who's great, of searchengineland.com, and we've talked to Danny before. He's a really smart guy. This is his beat. He covers search engines. And Danny pointed out that, well, if you search for Decor My Eyes on Google, you'll see all the negatives. That's what Google said. Well, just search for the company. You'll see the problems. But he said, look, this isn't the problem. She didn't search for Decor My Eyes. She searched for LaFont frames. So she never saw the negatives. She only saw companies that sold LaFont frames. Because of all the negative links to Decor My Eyes, you know, this is how PageRank works. The more links, the better. In fact, many of these negative links come from a site called Get Satisfaction. We use it at Twit. A lot of companies use Get Satisfaction. It's a place users can go to complain or to ask for, you know, it's a kind of a customer service site, third-party site. And it has a lot of Google juice. If there are a lot of links on Get Satisfaction, that's going to raise your search results up. Doesn't matter that they're negative links.
And, you know, you can't have Google doing, you know, links based on sentiment, because there are so many angry links, say, out there against Barack Obama or Sarah Palin, and it would drive those websites, you know, the White House's website, way down. And so, you know, that's not a solution. Danny makes a really good suggestion that when you search for, say, a brand of eyeglasses, and this is one of the search results, that alongside or underneath the result for that specific site, you see some of the ratings that come up. In fact, it might be interesting for maybe a competitor for Google to do something like that.
Yeah. I mean, you can imagine Google including, say, Yelp star ratings or something on there.
Does Get Satisfaction use a star rating system?
I don't know. I don't think so. You know, when the way it works for us, if something goes wrong with one of our feeds or something, people go to Get Satisfaction. They say, hey, your feed's screwed up. And we have staff looking at that on a regular basis. Amber, a lot of companies I know use Get Satisfaction.
Yeah, definitely. And, you know, I think the funny thing about this story is I think this is one of the reasons that I rarely ever buy anything online anymore just based on a Google search. Well,
really?
I don't. Well, I depend on my online social networks like Twitter and Facebook, and I'll go there and say, hey, I want to buy sunglasses online. Does anyone have a recommendation? Because for me, you know, sifting through all the results on Google, it just isn't that informative, and I just don't rely on it or trust it as much as I would trust my own social network. So I think social search, I mean, this is, you know, obviously has a really bright future. And if I'm staying in a hotel in a new city, I'll go there and say, hey, has anyone heard of this hotel? What do you think? Because to me, Google just isn't relevant necessarily as much anymore because I can rely on these other networks.
So this is actually a problem for Google. Google's response was, well, you know, what are we supposed to do? We can't, we're not going to censor this result. This is a true result. What does Google have a responsibility here?
I don't think so. There's lots of crappy products and sites out there.
You don't want Google to be the arbiter of, oh, this is good, this is bad. You know, I mean, that's
not at all.
Or what you were talking about, Dwight, which is called sentiment analysis,
right?
Where it's not merely how many links, it's how many negative versus positive links. But you don't want Google to be the arbiter of that either. What should Google do, Dwight? I mean, what besides
Google should do what it does best, which is give you data. And if it were to show you some of the responses from Get Satisfaction or some other, there are other services that do provide ratings. I think if it just gives you the data along with each e-commerce site, you know, that offers to sell you something, I think that's probably the end of Google's responsibility.
Let me do the same search. Here's an opportunity for Bing. Same search on Bing. And I search for LaFont frames, and I get the LaFont company as the first few places. Huh? Maybe I don't get. Let me put frames.
Is Decor My Eyes even after the story still tops on Google?
Oh well, that's an interesting question. Let's try it on Google.
If Google has taken action,
they don't say exactly what her search was. I'll try LaFont frames. Framesdirect.com is number one. I don't see Decor My Eyeglass.com. Coolframes.com. Now, I don't know that these guys are better or worse. That's part of the problem. So I guess it's let the buyer beware. People should be perhaps, before they buy, doing
it. I don't see his site there at all.
I don't see it at all. I wonder if he got delisted.
Yeah, maybe.
The quotes from him are just stunning.
I think, though, even if Google does something and even if they include Yelp or any other services that provide recommendations that people have given, I can still see companies out there who kind of gaming these systems, right? And for me, that's why, again, I rely more on kind of a trusted network of people that I know or loosely know than going to search results. Because I know companies now who are going to Yelp and they're putting in fake reviews. TripAdvisor, to me, is just a disaster when you go to the site.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, there. I used to love TripAdvisor, but you can't trust it because you don't.
You can't trust it anymore because you know hotel administrators are in there. And so who do I trust? I trust my own networks, people who have faces who I've seen or know somehow, even if it's just online.
Now, Bing did, of course, this new Facebook thing. You can see there's my, hi, Leo, Bing just got better with your Facebook friends. this presumably would be, I don't see it, but presumably they could have incorporated, if my Facebook friends had been choosing frames, I guess, maybe let me try glasses frames. This is interesting. This is one of those solutions, is to put social graph information in here.
This would be an interesting test case for Blippi.
Ah.
You know?
Yeah.
Tell me about Blippi. Philip Kaplan is one. I don't think he's a founder, but I think he's very involved in it.
It's where you you make social your credit card purchases.
Right. Or Netflix or iTunes or.
Right. Mm-hmm. Right. It's a specific sites. And so you share them with other people. And, you know, if it were more widespread and you could provide along with your credit card information some rating of the experience, that would be interesting.
So the reporter, I love this. The reporter tracks down the guy who owns Decor My Eyes. His name is Vitaly Borker. He lives in the Sheepshead Bay neighborhood of Brooklyn in a large brick house. His welcome mat is emblazoned with a Russian phrase that roughly translates to go away. Not welcome. Go away. So he sits down on a leather sofa and says, what do you want to know? On the first floor of a large brick house and home office where he lives with his wife and two-year-old child, toys are all over the floor. Workers are noisily drilling nearby, renovating the garage. Mr. Borker perks up, explaining his business philosophy like a professor unveiling new research, talking at a frenetic pace, tossing in plenty of profanity and ending sentences with, do you understand? When I fly to Las Vegas, I look down and see all these houses. If someone in one of those houses buys from Decor My Eyes and ends up hating the company, it doesn't matter. All those other houses are filled with people too, and they will come knocking. He says, I'm not a sales girl at Macy's following a customer around the store to make sure you're happy. He says he first heard about Get Satisfaction when he got an email from one of the site's employees who was trying to mediate on behalf of unhappy customers. He says, they wrote to me. We'd like to talk to you. You should take a proactive approach. Mr. Borker sneers and rolls his eyes. I sent him a photograph of this, and he flipped him off.
What? They need audio or video of this interview.
Apparently he worked at Lehman Brothers, where he...
Oh, that explains a lot.
He did back-end computer systems for the mutual funds. He's been sued by several luxury manufacturers, including Chanel, that accused him of peddling counterfeits. But, I mean, all of this publicity has, weirdly enough, ended up helping him. He says he stumbled upon the upside of ruseness by accident. I stopped caring. He says, and for that he blames customers. They lied and changed their minds in ways that cost him money. At some point, he started telling them off in the bluntest of terms. To his amazement, this seemed to better his standing in certain Google searches, which brought in more sales. So initially, he'd hired a company, an SEO company, to write positive things about him online. Then he realized odious behavior worked much better and didn't cost him anything.
So he does this on purpose?
Yes.
Oh,
yes.
My goodness.
It's you're right. 8 pages, Dwight, and it is you can't put it down. It's just
it
amazing.
Almost reads like fiction. You know, it's so good.
Yeah,
it almost reads like at one point he says that towards the end of the month he backs off because one of his resources, if he gets too many complaints, will cut him off. So he gets nicer towards the end of the month. And then when the new month starts, he's mean again.
Apparently, MasterCard says they're looking into him. He says, don't worry. There's no such thing as shutting someone down on the internet. It isn't possible. If Visa and MasterCard ever shut me down, I'd use the name of a friend of mine. I'd give him 1%.
I can't wait till the viral videos come out with someone depicting this guy and using all the script.
It's amazing. It's amazing. So, I think he's skirting pretty close to the law. I mean, he's threatening people. The police, Ms. Rodriguez went to the police. She said they were sympathetic, but they said, we're still trying to build a case. She said, I want him to know if anything happens to me, who did it? She was that afraid. She was that afraid.
Okay, I take back my comment about not wanting to buy from there, because now I kind of want to buy from there.
See how mean they could be.
I do. He might have a bit of a spike over the next few weeks in terms of traffic. So I sort of want to buy something and see.
You just want to be abused.
I guess so. I suppose so. But it is intriguing nonetheless.
He was arrested October 27th. This is according to the Times, accused of aggravated harassment and stalking Mrs. Rodriguez. He confirmed he'd been arrested. He played down the charges. He says it's already been dismissed. Not so. There's an arraignment coming up. About 18 months ago, he says a detective showed up at his door and arrested him on accusation of physically threatening a woman who was a customer. She must have known somebody, he says. She's a psycho. Wow. He says, he's the Howard Stern of online commerce.
The description of his voice actually is...
it's more Bronx than Russian, isn't it?
It's Bronx with a touch of Russian.
Yeah. I don't know if I can do that one, so I'm going to stick with the... Hey! He says, I'm doing fine. He says, I'm sure this is taking a toll on my health. I probably won't live as long as you.
Is that what he said?
Yes. So the reporter says, maybe you should find a more mellow job. Maybe become a shepherd or something. I love this! I like the craziness. This works for me. Unbelievable. Unbelievable. So, it's not Google's fault, is it? No.
I don't think so.
Is he gaming Google? No.
Well, he is gaming Google.
Is he?
He is gaming Google, yes. But in kind of a most unexpected way. And... you know, so long as Google doesn't show you exactly why somebody's getting those hits, he could continue to do it, except it looks like they have pulled him down because I went through three pages of the results.
Yeah. The site's still there. Site's still there. It's just not on the Google. Now, Google could do this. I mean, that's just the one thing that Google will do and feels no compunctions about doing or explaining it to you. They'll just take you out.
It reminds me, though, I mean, if you think about it, it's not, he's not doing anything new in terms of what's been done in the offline world. There's offline world with celebrities.
Soup,
you know, you think about celebrities.
Nazi. Think about the soup Nazi, right?
Right.
Sure, yeah. You know,
no soup
and
you
think of, you know, bad press as being a good thing. All publicity is good, right? I just found their Twitter account, by the way, Decor My Eyes on Twitter.
Oh, is it good?
And they only have 1, 2, 3, 4 tweets. But the most recent one is from 22 hours ago. And it says, have a look at this publicity stunt. Wow, we are famous.
Oh, geez. Oh, geez.
So
talk about unrepentant.
There's 250 people following.
Oh, I'm going to. Is it just Decor My Eyes?
Yeah, I'm going to follow.
This guy is going to be an internet celebrity.
How
many followers does he have?
Just a couple hundred.
He has 250 followers. Right. He's not listed anywhere, but that's not a big surprise. So, and he's following 44 people. He has. It says he has 8 tweets out, actually.
I'm telling you, Pulitzer Prize for this article. At the end, we say our... This is the reporter again. We say our goodbyes, and I ask him to sit for a photograph. No, he says. Too many psychos out there. Besides, he doesn't need his face in the newspaper. What he needs is his company's name visible for all the world to see and all the search engines to crawl in the online version of the New York Times, along with some keywords, of course. Just throw in designer eyeglasses, designer eyewear, and a couple of different brand names, he says, and I'm all set.
Oh, my goodness.
You know, I'm telling you, he's going to be on Letterman.
Oh, yeah, he is. I don't think we're going to see the end of this guy.
This guy's his name has been made. Ironically.
It's funny.
Ironically. So what should you do? Should you shop via Google? No. You should shop via Google Shopper. I mean, there you'd see some reviews.
Well, you
shop definitely.
Smartly. You shop smartly no matter what you do. You do your due diligence. And before you buy at a... from any particular site, you search the name of the site. You know, Jeff Jarvis in his post talked about buying from Dell years ago and then not searching on Dell Sucks.
Right.
You know, you definitely want to search for Decor My Eyes Sucks and see before you buy their sunglasses.
That's what you were talking about a little bit, Amber, too, though, is that it's not squatting. But I know a number of companies will buy their name Sucks. Screw.
Oh my gosh. I would recommend that to any company. You know, there's like 10 different things that they can buy just to make sure that other people don't latch onto them. So I think that's a pretty standard procedure that's been going on for quite a while. People try to scoop up any of those names so no one else sits there. One thing on Decor My Eyes, it looks like they have a live chat, but there's no one there right now. I think it could be kind of fun one of these days to just jump on and see if they're rude in chat too.
Get in there, Amber. Chat with them.
I'm going. I'm going to dig up a little more.
It is just fascinating. And by the way, I interviewed Steve Martin earlier today on the radio show. It was what he wanted to talk about. He thought that was fascinating. Yeah. So everybody's kind of aware of it.
Yeah.
We're going to take a break. We'll come back with more. We have lots more tech news. And Amber MacArthur is here. I don't need to introduce Amber. She's the host of our own show, Net at Night, her own show, CommandN.TV. You see her on TV in Canada, my former co-host on Call for Help, the author of Power Friending, a book of all about how to use social media for your business. Maybe he read that.
I hope not. Hey, Leo.
If I were you, I'd send him an autographed copy.
I think I might.
Get a blurb for the next printing.
That's a great idea.
Well, you know... I've interviewed people like this. I mean, the internet's full of people like this who have a unique perspective. That's kind of the fun of it. Also here, Dwight Silverman. He is the tech blogger at blogs.cron.com/techblog. Does a radio show out of Dallas.
Out of Houston.
Houston, I'm sorry, Pacifica Radio there. When is that show on?
That's on Wednesday nights, 8 o'clock to 10 o'clock Central Time. It's called Technology Bites, and we kind of do what you and Amber did with call-in tech help.
You got to have me back on. That was really fun.
We will have you on anytime.
Okay. I really enjoyed it. I had a great time. You have a great team. Like it seems like there's 12 people on that show. It's huge.
Yes. The studio feels like that too.
It's very full. All right. And Andrew Barron is he, hey Eileen, is he on his way? He'll be here any minute now. I'll tell you what, if he makes it by the end of the show, I'll put him on. That's a deal. That's my promise to you. Before we go on, I want to thank our friends at Carbonite. They do a great product. You've heard about the consumer version of Carbonite. This is an online backup that is just fantastic. Does everything right. It's automatic, encrypts 128-bit SSL. Whenever you're online, even if it's at a Starbucks or an open access spot, you are safely encrypted, sending your data up to the cloud where you can retrieve it anytime. You know, if that laptop gets stolen, the hard drive dies, even if you accidentally delete a file, you just log on with any computer to your Carbonite account. There's your data. You can use, they have a free iPhone app, a free BlackBerry app. Well, a lot. The Carbonite found out a lot of people were using this in business. And the consumer version, they were buying an account for everybody in the office. Now, that's kooky. So they said, look, we're going to do a business version. This is CarbonitePro.com for small businesses. Same great Carbonite automatic backup, 128 SSL. You get triple DES or Blowfish encryption if you want complete privacy. This is good for a law office, a doctor's office, anywhere where you have to secure this data. But here's the cool part. One account, no charge for the number of users. You could have 1,000 users. You only pay for the data you use. And it starts at $10 a month. It's the single most, I've looked at them all, most affordable way to back up your business. For $10 a month, you get 20 gigs. So you could have 10 users, 2 gigs each. That's pretty typical. $10 a month. I want you to go to CarbonitePro.com. You can try it right now. 30 days free. They've got the price list there, everything you need to know. Software for Carbonite Pro is Windows only. Carbonite Consumer, Windows, and Mac. And I am told they're working on a good Mac version for business. But frankly, most business computers are Windows, so this works fine. CarbonitePro.com, a central dashboard so you know exactly the status of all your systems. Your users can restore their, by the way. So you have to, it was always the embarrassing thing if you... You know, you got the big presentation that afternoon and you accidentally delete the PowerPoint. And then you have to do the perp walk down the hall to IT and pray they're there. Please, will you restore my spreadsheet? I need that PowerPoint back. Well, you don't have to do that because they control it themselves. CarboniteProdot.com. Ladies and gentlemen, Andrew Barron in the house. Here, sit over here, Andrew. That's your seat right there. Just in time, Andrew.
All right.
Did you? Where's your Movember? I've been watching your mustache grow. It's gone. Here, pull that microphone right up to your mouth there.
All right.
Unlike, and point it at yourself. Really aim it at your mouth. Yeah.
All right.
Awesome. Hey. So did you run into a little traffic on the way?
This has been an incredible experience. Not knowing much about driving around in California, certainly can't go based on minutes per mile.
You didn't use Google, did you? No, yeah.
And, yeah, just also a little unfamiliar with the signs causing
I'm glad you made it.
A few issues.
And by the way, we call that bridge the Golden Gate Bridge, not the San Francisco Bridge.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Well, actually, a long story, but anyway, not worth
it. I'm just teasing you. It's great to see you. Rocketboom.com. We talked to you last time. We talked about magma.
Yeah.
And we were just talking about, as the show began, about your internet memes.
Oh, cool.
That is hot.
Yeah, it's crazy.
That's the big site now, isn't it?
It's the biggest one we have.
Pull that right up to you. You got to talk right into that thing. Because like this.
All right.
No, kiss it.
How's this?
Come on. Right in there. Yeah. So you can tell Andrew's a TV producer. So what do you mean? I can't put a microphone in front of my face. You won't be able to see me. No, that's what we do here. Think of it as radio, Andrew. Last time Andrew was on, the infamous Twit 57. Do you remember that?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. That caused quite some drama.
In the Apple store, you and Jason got into it.
Mm-hmm.
That was fun.
And it was especially a situation where none of us who were there on the program could hear.
No, that was the problem. It was my fault, and I take full blame for it.
No,
I still do, because we were in an Apple store, and we didn't provide headphones. And so nobody could hear what was going on. It was really noisy. Everybody was talking at once. You don't put Robert Scoble and Jason Calacanis in the same room and then expect anybody else to get a word in edgewise. It was just crazy. So Andrew,
it was kind of a gong show.
It was a gong show. And Amber was there.
Yeah.
I was. Yep. Hi, Andrew. Welcome to the show.
All right.
I know you know Amber well.
Yeah.
Awesome. So we've already talked about like a number of big stories, but we still have many more. So we're not done yet.
Great.
Yeah. It's really nice to have you here, and we won't mention Twit 57 ever again. You know, this is Twit 276.
Wow.
So it was a while ago.
Wow.
We can live that down. We don't have
to. You know what you're doing now.
Yeah, we figured it out. We give you headphones now.
Leo, what would you say is the biggest difference between then and now? Just in a short...
You know, before the show was beginning, we played a little bit of Twit 57, and actually there wasn't that much difference. It's still the whole premise of Twit was just good friends who are really interested in tech getting together, BSing, basically. We don't make any pretense to to any sort of authority BSing about the tech stories. And in a way, it works best that way because nobody feels pressure to say something deep or profound or and it's a great conversation. I always think of it as something you know, people who listen would like to feel like they're a part of, like they're sitting around the table with us talking.
Yeah, well, actually, on that note, I would say even up until today, every time when I describe Twit to people, the first thing I always say is that Leo has the largest audience that I've ever seen that is a participatory audience.
They are, aren't they?
I mean, the amount of...
If you just look at the chat room and all the stuff going on.
Emails and just how much everybody's into it. I think that's one of the most incredible qualities about Twit that has... really gone. I don't know how you did it, but I mean, it goes, or how you do it continuously. Yeah.
Well, it's not me because it's the audience. It really is. And it's just, you know, it's doing what they want. And so they tell me what they want.
Yeah.
So.
Well, you're it's managing fun. It. Great.
This is the first time here. Welcome.
Thanks.
Yes. All of it. Amber hasn't been here. The last time Amber was here was an empty room.
It was a small room, Leo, and I know you had high hopes, and I can't believe what you've built now. It's amazing. Every time I go to the Twit site and I see all of the different shows, there must be more than 20 now,
right?
For sure.
Well, the most important change is that we now have other anchors. It's not just me.
Yeah.
So Tom Merritt and Sarah Lane and Becky Worley, we have some really good hosts, and we're adding more all the time, and that's going to make the biggest difference of all. So I kept the TV stories till you got here.
Oh, okay.
Perfect. Number one, Google TV. Is it in trouble? According to TechCrunch, Sony is now cutting 25% off its Blu-ray units with Google TV. I have to say, I have a Logitech review. You probably do too, right, Dwight?
No, I haven't gotten one yet. I've asked for one. I haven't been sent one yet.
Highly underwhelmed. And it doesn't help that ABC, CBS, NBC, Fox, and Hulu all blocked their content from it.
Yikes.
What are you going to watch?
The reviews have not been kind either for it or the Sony version.
No, and, too hard to use, I think.
Too hard to use, and with minimal amount of content that the masses want to see, it's not a real compelling product yet.
And yet, I have to say... the promise of it is great. I mean, if it's Android, right? If you could put all, this is the thing that got me both Apple TV and Google TV. Just give us the marketplace. Let us install apps on this stuff.
Yeah.
That's what made the iPhone. That's what makes Android. Imagine an Android phone with no apps, an iPhone with no apps. You'd have the same lousy reviews, wouldn't you?
You know, I think the thing that's interesting about all of, the first thing I've noticed about all of the TV over IP boxes, whether it's Boxy, Apple TV, Google TV, it seems like every single one, when you turn it on, then you've got to figure out a bunch of stuff to start watching what you want to watch.
Oh, yeah. People, I mean, the first thing happens, you plug in the Boxy box, you've got half an hour of updates. Same thing with Google.
But even then, once you get it all set up, you still have to sit there and flick. Usually people like to just turn on the TV and just start watching.
Right.
And nobody's provided that experience yet.
First of all, as a internet TV mogul, do you watch TV at all anymore?
Still don't.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So you're a bad person to ask, really.
Yeah.
You're not even interested in the competition, huh?
Well, no, actually, I mean, I went through a long period of time where our I was interested in sort of like having a pure sense of influence, or I'd like to be influenced by other things other than TV.
Oh, you didn't want that influence. Yeah, that's smart.
Just to try to keep the fresh ideas. But yeah, right. I'm interested and like to see little clips and, the highlights.
Right.
Yeah, I feel the same way. It's funny because I don't even know why I have cable because I never watch it. Because even Saturday Night Live or any programs like that, I just wait for it to show up, very quickly on YouTube or another video sharing site. Because the reality is I'm not going to sit through many programs. And if I do, I have my laptop in front of me. And then after 5 minutes, I lose interest in what's happening on the show.
Well, that's just because we're ADD. So we are. Let's face it. We're all victims. I don't know if we were born this way and that's why we do so well in the milieu. Or the milieu has influenced us and turned us into short attention span people. It's very hard, which came first. But none of us have the attention span to consume TV anymore.
Yeah, I certainly don't.
I have to have something in front. Maybe this is the promise of Google TV was that maybe you could do both. You'd have picture in picture. You could Twitter. But it's not well designed.
It has to be a lot simpler than it is.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And the Twitter box is too big and the TV's too small. I mean, it just doesn't work.
when you hear the idea of, oh, I can search for television, you know, for what I want to watch.
Oh, goody.
That sounds like a good idea in theory, but then what that means is you have to put a keyboard in front of you, right, and you have to be, or you can use a, you know, a ridiculous remote control where you kind of where you mouse through the letters that you want. People just don't like that. People just want to sit back and relax. The closest one I've seen to it that does that is Roku.
I love Roku. That's my choice.
Which is based, it's just, you know, that uses the channel metaphor. You just move the cursor through a series of boxes that represent channels. And once you go into the channel, you just choose what you want to see. It's very simple. It doesn't have a lot of choice and not a lot of high-end choice, but as a kind of a supplement for TV, it's great.
You know, the only thing wrong with Roku, and the advantage maybe Boxy has, is it won't play your content.
Right.
So the Roku box is everybody on the internet, but if you have content on your computer or your servers or stuff, that's no good for that.
Yeah, and that's a big missing component.
Right. There. I think so. Although, I mean, now wait a minute, though. I mean, Rocket Boom was one of the early shows that I would guess you had more people watching streaming than downloading.
No, actually, we were always
More downloaded?
More downloading.
Okay,
yeah.
We've always been that way, too.
Yeah.
It's been my hope, my great dream that it would flip. It's about 80% download, 20% live.
It's still?
Yeah.
Okay, so we've definitely flipped. Like,
you have.
We're way on the, I mean, people consume it mostly through Flash video now.
Yeah, okay. So isn't that the future? So who cares if it's stored? Who cares if you can see stored video? Don't you just want to see what's playing?
Well, that actually brings up another thing that all of the boxes are kind of missing is that...
No Flash.
But also, what about your collection? You know, we're humans and we like to collect. People have had collections of DVDs, even if it's only 20 or 30.
Right.
And on your on Apple, it doesn't store anything. And so... how are you supposed to keep track of the movies and the right. video clips and the TV programs that you've watched?
Netflix thinks you don't want media. Netflix is now offering, and I think this is where Netflix is going. This is actually one of the stories. They're now offering a $7.99 a month plan that's just instant. No DVDs.
Mm-hmm.
And they raised their DVD account by $1. Doesn't it sound like they're pushing towards streaming only? In fact, I know Hollywood would prefer that because there's no risk of piracy.
Sure. Well, streaming still can work even without – you don't actually need to store it, but you still would like a mechanism to be able to bookmark it. Or
maybe a La-La-style mechanism where it knows what you own. It'll stream it for you, but you don't have to store it.
Yeah, you just need the tags, essentially.
Right.
Like, here's my collection of videos – that I like,
right.
but I don't store them here. I just know how to click to get them, kind of.
Right.
Well, Netflix has that with its queue. Gives you your instant queue, and you can queue up movies, and you don't have to necessarily – they're not queued up for you just to watch, but that's how I use it. I have probably about 20 or 30 in my instant queue, and those are kind of my movies, the ones I like to see.
I notice I very rarely – I mean, I have – you know, that documentary that I got on disc 5 months ago that's collecting dust under the TV
right.
from Netflix. But I very rarely watch those physical discs. They were sitting there for months. So I'm going to immediately do the $7.99 thing.
Well, I don't think that the queue is really, I mean, you're just hijacking the queue to use for that purpose because
right.
typically the queue is just kind of a dump of all the stuff that you think you're going to want to watch. But then when you're done with it, you want to kind of take it out of the queue and then it just goes away forever.
Well, there's about 20 movies that I have in there that I would come back to. I hate to admit this. Well, no, actually, I'm proud of it.
What? What's your guilty pleasure?
Can you organize them? Can you organize them based on like titles and categories? And
No, it doesn't give you that, but I sure wish it would.
So what is the movie that you want to see over and over again, Dwight?
Dead Snow.
Dead Snow?
Dead Snow. Zombie Nazis. Zombie Nazis. It's a great movie.
What is the appeal of zombies? Would somebody explain that? Well, how did zombies get so big in the and it's geeks. You go to a Jonathan Colton concert, everybody's dressed up as a zombie.
I wonder if it's Michael Jackson's Thriller. That,
you guys grew up on Thriller.
But
that's
also, it's a big group activity to kind of redo that.
We have zombie walks in Toronto that are really popular. I hate to say that. You know, funny thing is about Netflix, I don't know if you guys know this, but it's really not that popular in Canada. It actually just launched here this fall. And it was a big bust when they launched. They actually hired a bunch of actors to go down to their launch party and pretend that they were Netflix fans who got interviewed by some of the major media outlets in the city. So that was their number one problem, is it was uncovered that they actually hired actors who were interviewed by journalists. Wow. Second thing is we have hardly any content. So people were so excited about it. I don't know if you realize this in the U.S., but in most places, I mean, you're talking, oh, I love zombie movies. I mean, we get nothing when it comes to some of these providers. Definitely not zombie movies.
No zombies.
No zombies or any other major television shows that people want. So they just have kind of fallen flat.
That's interesting.
Apparently, it's not a twit unless we mention Hitler or Nazis, zombies, right? Which we've done both, by the way. In fact, we combined them felicitously. Thank you, Dwight, for Nazi zombies.
Is this Godwin's law?
That remains, yes, Godwin's. It's actually the Laporte corollary to Godwin's law. Godwin's law said that every conversation eventually devolves into calling somebody else Nazis. We Nazi zombies, and then we have to at some point mention jumping the shark, and then we'll be done. Then we can go home.
Did.
Oh yeah.
Well,
thank
Amber,
you, everybody.
Good
night.
Amber, are you saying that Netflix is jumping the shark in Canada?
Pretty much, and they've fallen, and there's no zombie movies here on it. So that's pretty much to sum up the situation here. It's not good. People are there. It's not a popular service.
Isn't
at all.
That interesting? And do you think that has to do with the streaming or just lack of awareness?
It's just the lack of content. I mean, it's the same thing in iTunes. You may think, okay, I want to go to iTunes and get one of the a new movie that just came out. Right. And for us and many other countries around the world, you go to try to do it, and you just can't get it. So the content is crap, and there's a lot of Canadian content. And with all due respect to my many producer friends that I have, some Canadian content is just weird and not that great. And so, you know, there's just a lack of quality. And I think, again, you know, getting back to the point where I said that Canada is one of the leading countries as far as pirating, that would be one of the reasons.
Well, and I think it's just a matter of time. I mean, initially in the U.S., streaming Netflix wasn't so compelling. It had a, you know, it was all crap zombie movies. But now, I would say almost everything is going to eventually be streaming. And then I think we're getting rapidly to that.
And it's
situation.
I mean, the reports that have been coming out about the success that Netflix has been having in America
is insane. Yeah.
I mean, I've been hearing that they're actually using as much as like 30% of all of the bandwidth
during prime time.
Yeah. I mean, that's massive of all in America, all bandwidth.
Yep.
And now they've got the TV programs in addition to movies. And in fact, you know what? I think maybe Netflix is essentially right now the killer app that makes mom and dad want to buy an Apple TV or something that allows them. All they want to do is just have just Netflix.
That's got to be why Apple TV sold so well, because I don't think it's the iTunes rentals. It's got to be Netflix.
And Roku, all the advertisements I see, it says Roku.
Netflix equals what you want. It's about Netflix. And that's why, but I think that's why we like Netflix, right, Dwight? Roku is because you get Netflix, but you also get Amazon. You get all these extra channels. There's a lot. You get Twit.
In fact, the other night I wanted to see Scott Pilgrim versus the World.
Uh-huh.
We have U-verse, and I couldn't make it play on U-verse. They were having technical issues. So I used my Roku and went over to Amazon and rented it through Amazon, and it was actually $2 cheaper through Amazon than if I had gotten it through UVerse. That's a great deal. That's great value. The other thing, Andrew, about Netflix is really smart because it's making apps for every device and putting Netflix on the iPad, on the iPhone is a really smart move. I love watching streaming video on my iPad. That's just, you know, being able to sit back and hold that right in my face on a chair is, I do that a lot.
They won't put it on Android, though, because they say there's no DRM.
Not secure enough.
It's not secure enough.
Well, the other thing is maybe Netflix is essentially the killer app operating system in a way that all of the boxes are needing and it's the layer on top of the boxes. In other words, whatever box you have, if you can get Netflix on it, just open it up, go to Netflix, and then do everything you want from there.
Which makes me question Hulu's strategy, because they could. In fact, this is what Mark Cuban said a couple of weeks ago in his blog, is, you know, Hulu blocking, the network's blocking, all they're doing is opening a bigger path for Netflix to come swooping in and say, that's fine, we'll own streaming, no problem, we'll take it.
And with the international issue, as Amber just pointed out, I mean, it's ridiculous and sad to see the lack of content going around the world.
This is why, frankly, Andrew, you have an advantage. I have an advantage.
Yeah.
Because we have a new model. It's not based on regions or countries. We want everybody. We don't care where they come from.
Yeah, exactly.
Although, I don't know about you, but many of our advertisers, we're slowly shifting that. Pay only for U.S. downloads. We're shifting that. That's starting to change.
Yeah, and also it just depends on what kind of advertisers, you know, you're working
with.
Well,
I'll give you an example. Ford wants the global audience. Yeah. They pay for the full audience.
Right.
Don't tell them this, but if you're a smart advertiser, you say, I want U.S. only. Something like Audibles, I want U.S. only, but you're going to get everybody else. And if you do business in all these other countries, but I understand the issue because advertising agencies at best are national. There's no global advertising. You know, every country has an advertising budget for that unit. How are they going to pay? You know what? I don't even understand how Ford does it because, I mean, do they make money off sales in Europe? I guess they must figure they do.
Sure.
I mean, they do ultimately. But does the agency benefit from it? I guess they do. I think what is happening is I think corporate's directing this. It's coming out of the corporate office, not
and
the agency.
And they're evolving, you know.
Yes, they're evolving.
And making it happen.
Good news for us.
Yeah.
Because that's a real advantage that internet broadcasters have over more traditional broadcasters.
Leo, does the issue with Audible only buying U.S. have anything to do with U.S. rights for some of their audiobooks?
Yeah, well, and by the way, I was using them as an example, and I'm not sure if they pay for – I believe they only pay for U.S. rights. Partly that's because they've been with us for 4 years. They're kind of grandfathered in. But they – I mean, Audible U.K., Audible Australia, they sell – those companies get new subscribers, and they make money. Based on the ads they hear on Twitter, 30% of our audience is outside the U.S. It's in Canada, Australia, England, Scandinavia. Oh, yeah, 30%.
Wow, that's significant.
So when I do an ad that I only get paid for the U.S., I get it's basically a 30% discount because I haven't figured out how to have different versions for different countries. That's too complicated for me. Moving along. What do you think of Kinect? Let's talk a little bit about Microsoft Kinect because it's been out for a few weeks now. Any of you use it?
I've got it.
Kinect.
Do you have it, Dwight? What do you think? In other words, Mike, my real question is, does it have legs?
I think it does, particularly for younger people, for kids. With me, it's kind of like I'm so out of shape that it's hard for me to play for any
length of time. You get off your duff and start dancing, Dwight.
But it, you know, the games are really good.
They're fun.
It's very the games are very similar to the Wii, the games that first came out with
but
the Wii.
But I think Wii does not have legs, is I guess what I am implying here, is that people get tired of the Wii.
Nintendo will do what Microsoft has done. They'll take away the controller.
Right.
They'll do their own version of that. So the Wii is kind of a transitional product. I think Microsoft has it. I think it's still a 1.0 product. But the nice thing is that it's very software upgradable. And so they can refine and fix a lot of the glitches and deal with there's a little bit of lag in it.
Right.
And I think they can fix that with software. So, yeah, I think it has legs long term.
I have to say I like it. You like it, Amber?
Yeah, I like it. I mean, I have the same issue with Kinect as I do with watching television. I just find, you know, playing games, watching TV, I know obviously playing video games is more interactive, but I just find it's something I get a little bit bored. You know, I guess I like the idea of, you know, sitting with my computer, being productive, creating content and those type of things. So I've never been a big gamer. However, I will say that it's fun. You know, I did a demo of it on my TV show here, Web Nation, and I really enjoyed it.
It's
you know,
fun, isn't it?
And there's no barrier to entry. It's not like, you know, the average person can't get up and understand how it works, which I think is an issue with a lot of video games to get that, you know, the family market involved. So I think they kind of have a hit on their hands.
Right. Rupert Murdoch says we're going to do an iPad newspaper, the Daily iPad. Yes, you're chuckling, Dwight.
Yeah. Keep reading, Leo.
He says we're going to hire 6 techs and 100 journalists for a national newspaper. It'll be 99 cents a week. iPad only. Not updated by the hour. Not updated every 8 hours. Updated once a day. Just like an old school newspaper.
Yeah.
We talked about this on Twig. Jeff Jarvis's immediate reaction was that's not enough. Not enough journalists to do a newspaper. How big is the newsroom at the Chronicle?
You know, I I don't know post our most recent layoffs. I think maybe about 200 to 300.
Two to three times bigger. And that's for Houston.
Two times bigger for this. Now, of course, if you're doing it right in terms of combining aggregation as well as reporting, you might be able to get away with that if you're limited in your scope. What I'm more concerned about is the fact that he's kind of taking the square peg of an old newspaper and forcing it into the round hole of an iPad app.
And you're surprised? It's Rupert freaking Murdoch.
Well, but, you know, he's not a dumb guy. And he's got people who are advising him. I mean, he needs to have some kind of social aspect, which it may have when it actually launches, you know.
Yeah, we don't know. I mean,
this is all speculation.
Right.
But it needs to have some kind of social aspect. It needs to update constantly. I mean, I'm not going to just pick this thing up and read it
right
in the morning and be done with it. I want to go back to it, and it needs to be my lifeline to the news all day long if it's going to be a hit. And you have to be able to share the content in it with other people. So you need to be able to send links out to it, to your friends. Which, if it's a walled garden, which is as it's described, that's not going to happen. So I think the market for it, it'll probably get a lot of interest right at first, but as people use it and see that it's very limited in scope, I think it'll probably drop off and it'd be a very much a niche product.
I could see buying for 99 cents a week if it's a good pay. If it's well written, I might buy it.
Do you guys know of any really good newspaper apps on the iPad, though? Because I know the Globe and Mail in Canada, for example, has an iPad app, but it's really limited as far as the content. And they're just kind of throwing the content there. Like, it seems like they could be possibly doing in this situation. Is there a great example of a newspaper?
USA Today is pretty good.
Yeah?
USA Today app is good. Also, the newer version of the New York Times.
The New York Times because it's a full New York. It's not Select anymore.
Right, but it's free temporarily. Early next year, they're going to start charging for it, which is interesting.
Washington Post is also doing, free for now, but soon to be paid version of... you know what the best one is the Journal. Now, you have to pay for it. But I think the Wall Street Journal does a very good... Basically, it's the print edition of the Wall Street Journal. I mean, it's not updated past the daily updates. But I would rather read this on an iPad than the paper one. The irony of this is I called them up, and you can buy the electronic only version, but it costs more than buying the print plus electronic version.
Right.
I don't get that.
Yeah.
So I get the print version, and I recycle it.
To me, the best online newspaper, and a newspaper in air quotes, is Flipboard.
Really? Yeah. You think so?
Flipboard is the way an online newspaper should be.
Yeah.
It is, it's still kind of clunky and the design doesn't always work. And I hate the intermediate step where it blows up a story and then you have to go off to the website. Right. I wish you could just take me to the web. But I use this to read the news. This is how I read the news.
What it's doing is kind of interesting, basically, except for the Facebook page. It's aggregating Twitter feeds and just finding the links in the Twitter feeds and then making a kind of a magazine out of it. So even when it says The Economist, it's not actually The Economist. It's whatever The Economist puts on its Twitter feed.
Right. And what I do is I take my the people I follow, and I've got them sorted into lists. And so I have a technology list and a journalism list, and I feed
you make
that.
You make your own, in effect.
I make my own, and it's some of the smartest, most interesting things on the web, organized in a very readable manner, and that is the way I like to read.
This is Scoble's tech influence. I don't make my own list. I use Scoble's tech influencers list, and it's a good feed. Now, this has an advantage over Rupert. For one thing, I don't pay anything for it. It is updated constantly.
It's really different because it's an aggregator to a content company.
But from the point of view of the user, isn't this superior to anything Rupert Murdoch
could do? I love it, and I actually use it. But what I keep finding is the way that it organizes it is really abstract.
Right.
Or it kind of when I end up wanting – I like to – go through the media that way, but I only end up using it like late at night when I'm like about to fall asleep.
Exactly.
I'm just sitting there like, just show me some candy
or something. I don't do research with it. You're exactly right.
Right. You know, it's for casual reading. It's for sitting back.
It's like People Magazine.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
Exactly. You can control. You can provide order to it using Twitter lists.
Right.
That's kind of the way to do it, so that you don't have just your entire Twitter feed, your entire Facebook feed. You know, break it down into lists just for this, and it works really well.
Now, but this is essentially parasitic because Flipboard creates no content. It's all other people's.
Yeah, it's an aggregator of other. Yeah.
So don't we need people like Rupert Murdoch to create content so we can aggregate it? I mean, you won't be able to aggregate the Daily because there's no outbound links.
Right.
Well, I think what's going to make the Daily interesting, I mean, I agree with everybody's arguments that it's kind of not going to work for the reasons that we all have expectations that are higher than
nowadays.
What we expect going to be.
It's the post-web world. The web exists. You can't take that back.
Right. But the thing that I think is the first obvious point as to why something that like that may not work is because most of the time when there's a news story, then everybody else jumps on the news story, and then it's not a private information that you have to pay for. And so I think the only way that it'll work, and I assume that this is how they're going to go for it, is they're just going to have to compile the best journalists that actually really write some significant, unique articles. Mm-hmm. They have to dig up and crack the stories.
When we were talking about the New York, you weren't here, but the New York Times article about this crazy guy who's gaming Google with Decor in My Eyes. I don't know if you saw it, but that's an example of great reporting. If Murdoch can find even 20 people that good, then it becomes a primary source and everybody will read it. Yeah. It's a magazine. Then it's The Atlantic. Then it's The New Yorker. Then it's a great magazine. Mm-hmm. But doesn't he do himself a disservice by not allowing outbound links? Because, I now have to get The Daily to read it. That was his idea. But there's no promoting of it. We may never know that great story exists. Only the people who buy it.
Because as soon as somebody reads it, then they're gonna write a version of it. It'll end up on Tech Meme, etc.
They rewrite it.
That's why I was saying you just
steal it.
The important headlines, just like the story you mentioned from the New York Times, we could all summarize that up, even though it was like a 9-page story.
True.
It was just like, here's a guy who is terrible to his customers, and he's actually making that work, and because he's gaming Google. And
it's
Google
a good point. We didn't, at least on this show, we didn't need to give you an outbound link. And we talked enough about it that if somebody's interested, they will get the New York Times version of it and read it.
So they'll get the
benefit of it. I do think that you get much more value, though, if somebody can embed a link in a Twitter stream and direct you to the traffic to your site.
Oh, yeah.
That's really much more valuable than having a closed, a walled garden on the iPad. By the way, Oprah's favorite thing.
I watched that video, Leo. I didn't actually see the show, but it's so funny because I can't tell you how many of my girlfriends watch Oprah and saw that show and were so excited to see her favorite things. But I watched the video that is in the article that you sent across, and I can't believe it's like some of her audience members were almost crying. They were so excited to see it. That is her number one product.
Wait a minute. Her audience members are thrilled that she picked
the
iPad?
They were just so excited. I can't believe how excited the audience was. Like,
hopped up on methadrine or something.
I don't know. She was so excited, too. I was kind of freaked out because I'm thinking, I love the iPad. It's fantastic, but it was really surreal.
Oprah's number one favorite thing. Now, this is somebody, by the way, taping off the TV, so this is probably highly illegal what I'm about to do here. I mean, literally, you can hear this is taped off the TV. It sounds like they got the microphone across.
I know it's wrong to be in love with a thing. And I don't normally recommend it, but from our very first moment together, I knew it had stolen my heart.
Oh, please, Oprah.
She's just associating herself with the hottest thing on the market.
You got it. Brilliant.
Leo, it comes, I don't want to make you watch that, but it actually, the iPad comes down in the studio with wings on it like an angel. And people go crazy. I'm not kidding.
What? What are you talking about?
Leo,
let's watch it. All right. I'm going to violate more. Oh, look at these people. They're overexcited now. Oh, my God. There it is. It has wings on it. She's dancing around it. It's like the Victoria's Secret models, only it's a thing.
They're worshiping it.
Amber.
Amber, don't blame this on me. She could have said
a muffler, and everybody in the audience would have gone crazy because they're so. You got to understand. Have you ever been to one of these shows, Amber, where the warm up and everything, where they really get you going?
Yeah, I have.
These people are just happy to see Oprah. They're not. They don't care less what came down out of the rafters.
It was just surreal, though, Leo. Yeah, I mean, I watched the whole thing just so I, you know, had a sense of what was going on. And the wings. I don't know. It was just bizarre.
Look at this woman.
They look like they just all won like 10 iPads.
Well, in fact,
she gave them iPads.
In fact, I think that's what happened. Is they said they realized they all got one.
Oh yeah.
So they were told ahead of the show, whatever Oprah picks as her favorite thing, even if it's a muffler, you get it. That's why they're so excited. They're getting an iPad.
Feel for this magnificent device. I really think it's the best invention of the century so far. And I gotta tell you,
how many iPads is this gonna sell?
I know.
Years to go. So what you gonna do to top this? I don't know. But thanks to my iPad, I now read about 4 newspapers a day. I keep a journal on
That's
my
who's
iPad.
Buying the daily.
Mm-hmm.
Right there.
And she you miss where she actually promotes the new Oprah magazine on the iPad. Yeah, so yeah,
There it is.
You said once you want to be the next Rupert Murdoch, Andrew Barron. You still want to be the next Rupert Murdoch?
Did I say that?
Yeah, I have it on tape. You told Jason Calacanis, and he mocked you for it.
Okay, well.
But I think what you were really saying is that this your generation. Well, it's not just you. It's our turn. I mean, I'm older than Mud, but it's your turn. it's the turn of the internet, isn't it? And the next Rupert Murdoch will not be a newspaper publisher. He will be, or she will be, an internet publisher.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, the whole idea is that that both all of us here, actually, Amber, you, myself, you know, all our colleagues, we're all in this unique period of time where in a position where, you know, the likelihood of any of us becoming Rupert Murdoch is obviously very slim, but we're all in a position to where we have a more realistic opportunity than probably has ever been before. And we're in the beginning of being positioned. So, you know, based on how we can make things work from here, it's kind of up to us to try to take hold of the opportunity that is clearly there.
Not to be self-serving, but this is, we're kind of like the Ernie Kovacs or the Milton Berle, or this is, we're getting to invent a new medium.
That's a little Charlie Chaplin like.
Yeah. He basically invented movies in many ways. Yeah, so yeah, I would agree with you on that.
And who knows, even, you know,
not in the sense that we'll be as rich or as successful, but merely that we have an opportunity in a new medium.
The opportunity is there, and more realistic than ever before.
Yes, I agree. Acer announces Android and Windows tablets for 2011. Talk about hedging your bets. Does anybody want a Windows tablet? Anybody? Show of hands. Nobody.
I'm not raising my
hand. Anybody?
No, although I'd be interested to see what would happen if you were to take the operating system on Windows Phone 7 and do that as a tablet.
I like that, and I bet you we will see that. In fact, I think Microsoft's hinted that that's what's going to happen. You know, I think Windows Phone 7 is actually pretty great.
I think it's interesting that that HP has been reluctant to send out to a lot of reviewers their current Windows 7 tablet, saying, oh, no, this is just for business and you cover consumer stuff.
You don't want this.
Because I have not tried one, but I have seen video of one. And you know how in the iPad, when you take it and you turn it on its side, it automatically changes in its orientation very smoothly.
Mm-hmm.
Apparently, when you turn a Windows 7 tablet, screen blanks and then reappears in the orientation, in the correct orientation. And that's just, you know, that's kind of not the experience that I think people
want.
That's
not what we're looking for here.
iPad.
By the way, little plug here. This is the Samsung Focus. I got to go back to the homepage. Look at that. There is the Twit application, thanks to Dimitri. There you go. Look at this. Look at this. Beautiful. That just shows you that he wrote an incredible. These are all the Twit shows. Plays back the video. We don't have live yet on here. I look forward to the time when we can put live video on here, as we can't already on the iPhone. But a really nice job. Thank you, Dimitri. And if that's free, if you have a Windows, if you're one of the 25,000 or whatever people who has a Windows Phone 7. But have you carried this around at all, Dwight? Have you used it?
Yeah, I don't have that one. I have the
This is a nice one.
I have the HTC one, but Yeah, I love it. In fact, I have always liked the operating system that is inside the Zune. And this is what it's based on.
It's basically the Zune, yeah.
Thing.
Yeah.
And even though people made fun of the early Zunes, the software in it was pretty nice. And it continued to get good. In the last Zune, the Zune HD is a really nice device, largely because of the software. And so I'm glad to see that they've stuck with this for the phone. It's surprisingly good.
Yeah. But that the Focus has a nice AMOLED, Super AMOLED screen. It's all the
sands.
It's beautiful. Yeah, it's a really good screen.
I kind of am curious as to whether Windows is going to make it in the long run. And one of the biggest reasons I think they... One of the things I think they have going against them the most right now is that kind of what we're talking about here, like we're excited about the apps, not the operating system so much.
Who cares about the OS?
But then but I think the reason why Windows may lose it is because there is one entity, kind of an entity that does care, and that's the manufacturers who either have to license Windows and pay for Windows and kind of deal with it as it is, or to use a free version of Android. If you're going to ship a hardware, you may want to go with the free.
Why pay for an OS? That's the appeal of Linux. And after all, Android is the most widely used version of Linux there is.
I wonder if Android is just going to wipe out, between Android and iOS, just wipe out Windows.
Interesting point of view. I hadn't really thought about that. Microsoft's got to be wondering. I think we got Windows for a little longer.
I mean, it's going to take a long time, of course, because there's so much business and so many people on it. I just wonder if...
You know, Apple's clearly positioning itself in some ways to be ready, at least, if people want to use iOS instead of OS X.
I can't believe they haven't done it yet. They must have a very strategic reason why.
Oh, I left out one thing. Nazis, zombies, jumping the shark, and Angry Birds.
Oh, of course.
Angry Birds Day, December 11th, 2010. Apparently, this is not to celebrate it, but to stop the madness.
Oh, no.
On this special occasion, we want to raise our concerns about the alarming levels of avian porcine aggression worldwide. To our knowledge, at least 3 trillion piggies have been popped around the globe this year, with millions of feathered fowl lost in the process. It's time to stop for a moment and think about the consequences, people. Angry Birds meetups around the world. I can't. There's not many games that get this kind of loyalty.
It's crazy. I can't believe it. You know, I have to say, and I mentioned before that I don't play games a lot, but this is one game that I can sit and sort of, it's so easy to just pick up and just play for a little bit, right? I know, it's not good.
Yeah.
Did I read correctly that somebody just said that there were actually 7 million downloads on Android for that?
Yeah. Yes, already, yeah.
Free, already. It's free on Android, ad-supported. I bet they make tons more money because of the ads than they do on the... This will be a very good test of Android and whether you can make money on an Android application. And they do say they're going to do a Christmas version. They did a Halloween version. And that the next version of Angry Birds will be Angry Pigs. They get their revenge.
Yeah. They're the next Rupert Murdoch right there.
It's a small Finnish company, you know? It's amazing.
Although also gaming is, you know, really picking up with in terms of...
Touch gaming is huge. It's a form of casual gaming that I think is really underestimated. And, boy, you know, the Nintendo DS, forget it. People got there's phones. Go ahead, Amber.
Have you seen on either the iPad or the iPhone 4... The latest release from id, Rage HD.
Yes, unbelievable. I'm not going to play it because I played it on iPad today, and I showed it, and we got pulled off YouTube for inappropriate content.
Really?
Yeah, because it was so violent or something. Yet there's plenty of videos there, but I guess they said that, well, the expectation is of iPad today, you're not going to have ugly violence. By the way, here is a better shot of all the people... Oh, shoot.
Of all the people
happy that they're getting an iPad.
It's crazy.
Wow. It's like Meet the Beatles.
This is like, these are the Oprah audience. They are so happy that they're all getting free iPads.
Freaks me out.
They're going crazy.
You know, I guess it's funny. Oh, go ahead, Amber.
Look at this.
It's
like the Chilean
miners.
It's like...
It's insane. I was just going to say that one thing about the iPad, though. I mean, obviously, I enjoy using it.
This guy's crying.
I cannot believe how it's great for kids, too. And I know just with my son, Connor, he's only 21 months now, I guess. But he can literally navigate the iPad.
Yeah, yeah. Two-year-old.
Play
yeah.
games. I mean, a lot of the touch games that they have for toddlers are just phenomenal. And so he sits there. We just went on a road trip, and he played with the iPad literally the entire way. He loves it. He says iPad, iPad, and he can only say 10 or 15 words. But the
wait
funny
a minute,
thing
wait
about
a minute.
It,
your baby's 15th word is iPad?
Yeah. Oh, for sure. iPad, wow. iPad, iPad. He says it all the time. He loves the iPad. We yeah. have to kind of control it now.
What do
a
you
bit.
What do you have him do? What is he doing? He's not playing Angry Birds.
No, he plays all these great games. They have Old McDonald, where you right. can, you know, touch the pig and the pig jumps up and down. They have amazing toddler games. I cannot believe it. Many of them are educational, where, you know, they can learn the sounds of different animals. He's got literally, you know, a wow. dozen apps that are geared towards that age. But what's really interesting, and I cannot believe this, he now goes up to the television when we have it on, which is not that often, and he tries to touch the television. Mm-hmm. He gets really angry because he can't understand mm-hmm. why he can't interact with the television.
Mommy, why can't I pinch? I want to zoom it.
To me, this is just a sign of, yeah. you know, how first of all, how amazing the iPad is, but the future of media, you know, he can't handle even a computer screen. The fact that he can't touch it if he's watching right. a video on a computer screen, he goes nuts.
This actually confirms what you said, Andrew. It's really, people are going to get so used to that, they're not going to want a desktop operating system. Does it, now both Dwight and I like, or love, in fact, our Samsung Galaxy tabs. These are 7-inch Android-based tabs. Mm-hmm. So it doesn't have. Do you think, Dwight, it has to be iOS or can it be Android? Could it be Windows mobile?
I think it has to be something that's designed for touch.
Right. Not Windows.
I think one of the failures of Windows 7 is that it's not designed for touch. And even if you do things like HP has done with its Touch Smart kind of shell that sits over it, it's still a shell.
Right.
It just doesn't feel quite right. It's got to be designed from the get go for touch. And that's why I think where Apple wins and Android wins.
Yeah, I keep touching my laptop.
I know.
It's kind of weird.
Well, I want my Mac. I thought maybe they would have already come out with an Air that had a
I love the Air.
Also.
Yeah. And, of course, Steve Jobs says
it's ergonomically not right.
You don't want to have
you
want
to do both. You don't need to constantly right. do it, but I'd want to go up and touch and then type and
yep.
do some things.
Let's take a little break. We have a great panel here. Andrew Barron is here from rocketboom.com and Magma and the new internet meme. What is the URL of that?
Knowyourmeme.com.
Knowyourmeme.com. If you just go there every day, you will not be left out of cocktail party conversations ever again.
It's pretty crazy what's happening over
what's
there.
What's the hot meme right today, right now?
Hmm.
I should go there. Let's find
well,
out.
A lot of people are still kind of recuperating from Chumblr.
Well, I don't even know that. See, I'm left out. I feel left out. I missed out.
This is really interesting. So you know how 4chan has been causing
right.
quite a lot of havoc and really doing some interesting hacks on the social web. And so they started to attack Tumblr.
Right.
And then Tumblr was like, hey, we're not going to stand around and get attacked. We're going to attack that. And it was, you know, kind of a bloodbath, essentially, of posting. Tumblr decided that what they were going to do to 4chan is post cute pictures of cats and, you know, fun kind of like happy-go-lucky
aww.
Stuff on 4chan. Because you know how they go around and are always posting,
right.
like, really cruel,
and
X-rated and stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
So that was kind of funny. But then I noticed that 4chan also, their method of attacking Tumblr was effective. What they would do is they would go around and follow tons of people. And then you know how people just instantly follow back quite a bit? And all those people that just followed back, they suddenly wound up with all this really horrible media in their dashboards.
Oh,
so
no.
people were like logging in going, whoa, what's going on with my dashboard? It's like turned into a porn site, essentially. And so it was kind of funny. And at the end of the day, it seems nobody will really probably admit this, but I have to say, I think Tumblr kind of
won.
I'm not going to go as far as say that they won, but they certainly did hold the ground.
Yeah, so. Yeah. Knowyourmeme.com. Andrew is here. Dwight Silverman from the Chronicle, Houston Chronicle, cron.blogs.cron.com/techblog. Amber MacArthur from AmberMac.com. Before we go on, and there's lots more to talk about, I want to talk a little bit about the Ford Edge. What a great vehicle. I'm a big, as you know, I've become a born-again Ford fan. driving my nice little 2010 Mustang. The Edge is great. Now, Amber, you got to get the Edge so you and Connor and Chris can drive in safety and comfort. It's got the most legroom in the second row. I like that. It's got the optional Vista roof featuring the, you know, the front panel, which tilts and opens. But then there's a fixed skylight in the second seat. So, you know, they're not nice. They're not traveling in the dark. They're coming along with you. The great ambient lighting. I have that in my Mustang. It could change the lighting. Just really slick. But the thing I like best is the My Ford Touch. This is amazing. The 8-inch screen in the center console. The two little screens behind the steering wheel. Absolute control without keeping, you know, your hands never leave the wheel. You can do almost anything. Touch and voice commands for entertainment, climate control, phone, navigation. It includes two five-way switch pads on the steering wheel. So, I mean, it's almost like a joystick. It's almost like a video game you can play. It is amazing. I want you to go to a Ford dealer and test drive the Ford Edge, the 2011 Ford Edge. And get ready because the 2012 Ford Focus is coming. This is their new international car. If you go to twitfordfocus.com, twitfordfocus.com, you can enter for a chance to win a trip to Madrid to be one of the first people in the world to test drive the 2012 Ford Focus. Now, I've seen it, but I didn't get to drive it. You could be driving a 2012 Ford Focus in Madrid at the Spanish National Institute for Aerospace Technology. How about that? Well, I got to sign into my Facebook account here. So here's how you get involved. Go to twitfordfocus.com. This is through December 31st. Make a video of 2 minutes or less saying why you should go to Spain to test drive the new Ford Focus. And then Ford will donate $10,000 if you win. $10,000 to the charitable cause of your choice. A total of $500,000 will be donated. And send you and a friend on a trip to Madrid to test drive the 2012 Ford Focus. Now, that is a good deal. Tell Ford which charitable cause you'd like to support and why you should win this prize. I can hear Amber going there right now. Wait to make the video after we're done. TwitFordFocus.com. We thank Ford for their support. They make great stuff. I'm just, you know, my Mustang's right outside. I love it. Although I wouldn't mind the new one. Just a hint, little tip, birthday coming up. I mean, just, you know, it's a Mustang. That'd be good. Just a little thing. But did you see that Facebook wants to trademark the word face?
What, I can't believe that.
What the hell is that all about?
I don't know what that's all about, but I'm almost sick of hearing Facebook news. I mean, I like the site, but I don't know. This is just one of those things I think is absolutely ridiculous.
Voice of reason, Dwight. This is just how business is done. You trademark the words you use. What? Tell me why.
That's ridiculous.
That's what I say.
I mean,
come on. That's a plain old English word.
Exactly. I mean, it's like, did Handspring ever, you know, trademark the word hand? I hope not.
It's not. I mean, you could trademark Facebook. You could trademark FaceTime. But come on.
But not face.
Not face. So, Amber, did you get the invite I sent you to Diaspora?
I sure did, Leo, and I have logged on, and I'm not overly impressed, I will say. I don't know how you feel about
it. Well, it's new.
It's new, but Leo, one thing that drives me crazy is it, I mean, I love programmers, but it really looks like it was created just by programmers in the sense that when you log in, there's just, it's not very user-friendly in the sense that some of the words and terminology they use and the whole idea of managing your life in aspects, I hate that word that is throughout the site. I don't know if you noticed that, but aspects are different, I guess, groups or
it's
categories.
Just groups. It's their word for groups.
I don't know. I know it's new, but it's... You know,
it's not only new, there ain't much going on.
There's nothing there. Yeah, I didn't even know where to go. I mean, I logged in and I see you're one of my contacts, and then I go to the different tabs. Of course, there's nothing there because I haven't done anything. So there's just no content, I guess, unless you start kind of pushing a lot of stuff through there yourself.
I like it because I got the name Leo.
Shoot, I got to get on there.
It's a social site.
You could get Andrew. Wouldn't that be nice?
It's a social site, and it's in alpha. So
yeah,
by definition, it's not going to have a lot of stuff yet.
Yeah.
You know, it's up to you to make the stuff.
Yeah.
And the fact that it's an alpha, that kind of feedback that you're giving Amber, hopefully they'll take to heart and do something, you know, to make it a lot better. This is often the case. Engineers design something, it comes out looking like it's designed by engineers.
I have to be honest. I invited about 12 people, and Amber, you're the only one who accepted.
Leo, you remember that, okay?
Yeah. Y'all say you. From now on, invites go to you.
Well, it doesn't look like Amber's all that active right now.
But that's the thing is you don't really know what to do yet. I mean, when I signed up for Twitter, I there's information there. I can, you know, easily follow people. But here, you know, if you're sort of searching around, it's difficult to kind of begin using it. And when I say it's not that user friendly, it is easy to sign up and get an account. But there are just weird things. Like, I don't know if you noticed this, Leo. I think when you enter your birthday, you know, you can't even pick like from a little form. You can't even pick the year. You actually have to type something in. And it just there's little tweaks like that that I think they could have done a better job.
You can type in your gender. You can make any gender you want.
Oh yes, that's the thing. You could be any gender. I kind of was surprised by that, but
well, I think that's good. I'm mannish.
I noticed you were mannish. You're my only mannish friend.
I think that the whole dysphoria thing is interesting because I know it's close to my heart because I've always been very proactively outspoken about wanting a decentralized.
What's cool about this is you can, they call them seeds, but you could run, in fact, I'd like to run our own diaspora server on our site.
And that's the promise of it. It's sort of like what I want more than anything is my own Twitter or my own Facebook version that I can run on my own server. And the most important thing is then if Twitter goes down, you can just get it from my site or, you know, it's decentralized.
That's how it should be. I agree with you.
And nobody should own it.
We tried to do that, remember, with a Twitter, you know, it's status.net now. We had our own Twitter, Twit Army. We still do on StatusNet, it was Identica. But it just didn't catch on. Same idea, you federate, all of that. It just didn't catch on. I think the disappointment with Diaspora, and by the way, I'm not yet disappointed. It's early days yet. But, I mean, they raised $200,000 at the beginning of the summer. They've been working on this 6 months. I mean, I could have written this functionality in Ruby on Rails in about 10 minutes. Yep. I don't understand what they've done.
The brand is what's there now, but I don't know who the people are or what's going on.
It's a bunch of NYU students.
Right. So. Yeah.
Somebody said, hey, that's nice that we paid them $200,000 to learn how to program.
Yeah. I think that the best business decision those kids could make right now is to come out here and establish their business and find some real talent.
That's what Zuck did.
Knows how to,
he dropped out. Well, drop out, kids. We're telling you. Be cool. Get out of school.
You learned it on Twitter.
Yeah. Just drop out right now. You don't need that. You don't need that education. That's not.
They've got the momentum, though, and the traction just with the brand and the concept. So they really, I mean, I'm hopeful it will eventually turn into something because we need it. And it's the only thing that's got everybody's attention. Just like you were saying, JQ, et cetera.
Yeah, they all died.
Never worked out.
They all died.
But truly want people to start using it. Like one thing that frustrated me when I logged in is that invites are currently closed. So even though Leo invited me, I can't invite anyone else. So like all of a sudden my network is so tiny, right? I have to maybe try to search people who may be on there.
You could have gotten more invites. Early on, we were getting a bunch of invites and then they couldn't keep up. So they've closed it down, the invite system. They couldn't. It was a technical issue.
And Leo, can you share? Because when I tried it, it says share across all your aspects. So when I try to share, it seems I can only share photos. But can you share text, just conversations? Or have you? I know I can't see if you've done anything. Maybe you haven't.
I only have one friend. How can I share across my aspects? You're the only aspect I got.
You can share something with me.
Hey there, Amber. and I can add photos. Now, by the way, it's kind of interesting because right now it's piggybacking on Twitter and Facebook, ironically, because when you post, that's where it goes. So I'm going to make that log into Twitter. I'm logged into Twitter. I'm logged into Facebook. Manage connected services. Okay. I probably should post something better than hey, Day Amber.
What you could say derp.
Think about derp?
Yeah.
What's derp? D-E-R-P?
Oh, derp?
I should just type derp?
Yeah.
Really? What will happen?
I'm not going to say.
All right. D-E-R-P. Capitalize it?
Sure. Yeah, that looks good.
Derp? Period. Just like that?
Yeah.
Derp?
Yeah.
Okay. Andrew told me to do this. Should I add a photo? Nah, no photo. Let's just derp. Okay, so I've derped now. Now, that's going to go to Facebook, and it's going to go to Twitter. Oh, what have I done? Have you just told me to do something embarrassing?
I just found it on Know Your Meme, Andrew.
Oh, if I'd only gone to Know My Meme.
Sometimes used online to signify stupidity, much like the earlier forms of duh and der.
It's like duh or der.
Right, yeah. Well, I mean, we were looking for something to say.
No, this is perfect. I thank you, Andrew. So now my third post on diaspora. I mean, I think this is okay, but I mean, it's no different than anything else. I'm hoping that they put a lot of underlying stuff in here and that there's a lot of stuff going on that we just don't see. And, of course, the ability to start a seed. And I'm going to wait. Once they get out of
Alpha. I'm going to wait, too, because every time they do improve it, everybody's going to come back and have a look. So they've got the right traction right now.
Look, I got some requests. Two new requests for friendship. I'm Leo, by the way. Joindiaspora.com. So now what happens is you drag these people. Doesn't have their name or anything, so I don't really know who they are. That's Ralph. I'm going to make him a fan. See, I'm dragging him to an aspect. I have to say, I like this part of it because...
Yeah, the drag and drop.
Yeah, it's making lists. Remember Mark Zuckerberg said, nobody wants to make lists. This is a very easy way to do it. When people ask you whether they want to be a friend, you can put them in a bin.
Well, if you get another... If you get another set of invitations, Leo, send me one.
I will. I'll play. Send one. Okay. Let me see if I have any more left, because I had like 20, but I think that they all went away is what happened. So don't ask me, folks. I ain't got them. Remember, Amber? I mean, we just get slaughtered when we say we got invites to anything.
Yeah. I remember Newsvine, 1,200 invites, 3 days of me online all night long, sending them out to every single person.
Whatever. Now, is that still around? Newsvine's still around, isn't it?
MSNBC bought it.
MSNBC bought it.
Yeah, owns it.
Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah.
Amber, see, you did all that work for MSNBC.
Eventually. They owe me big time.
Derp. Invites are currently closed on this diaspora pod. Oh, there's seeds and there's pods. I wonder if there's stems.
You can request that feature, Leo.
I'd like to be a stem. Tim Berners-Lee says Facebook could fragment the web. Yeah, derp. How about this? FCC wants to use texting for 911. Does that seem like a good idea?
Well, sure. If you have, the average teenager sending, 3,000 texts a month or something that. They don't use the phone.
Some kids are so fast with their thumbs. Help, I am falling off a cliff. They could probably do that fast enough.
Maybe they don't know how to use the phone. I don't know.
Right.
Yeah, also I'm sure. The other thing is you can usually get your SMS to go through sometimes
when
you
the phone can't.
Signal.
That's
a good point. I guess it makes sense.
Or they also want to allow protocols for sending video and audio along with it. So if you're at a fire, you can take a video of the fire and where the location is, send GPS coordinates along with your SMS.
That's actually kind of... interesting. I don't know how valuable it is. What do they need a video of it for?
The only thing they need to be careful of is, I know with some of the news stations in Toronto, and I'm sure it's the same thing in other places, is because they're asking for all of this user-generated content, the thing is people are risking their lives to, shoot video of fires.
Right.
And if there's a car accident, people are pulling over because they want to be able to capture footage. And it just makes me a little bit concerned.
The iReport generation.
Somebody in the chat was just wondering what would happen if you sent in derp into 911. What would they do?
Oh, I'm not going to take a chance. I've already derped the internet. I don't know if I want to do any more derping.
Well, another question
I blame you, Andrew.
Is SMSing too easy? To use 911 right now, you pick up the phone, you have to dial it, you have to talk to the operator, it's a person to person, and it makes it harder to do so it makes it harder to do something fake, whereas if you just want to prank something, call in a man down at a location on your phone and you end up getting the cops, and it's a false alarm.
Yeah,
there's no way to gauge the tone of it, right? And I think that's I'll tell you guys a quick little story about my old roommate Jenna. Her mom was traveling in Northern Ontario, and she sent us a text message that said, bears everywhere, send help. And this was the first text message this is the first text message she ever sent in her life. So Jenna and I are at home. It's a Saturday afternoon. We obviously didn't have better things to do. We start freaking out. We start laughing, and then we think, oh my gosh, what if it's true? Because we know she's driving through Northern Ontario. There's a lot of bears, and maybe she doesn't need help. So of course, I'm on the phone with the RCMP. We try to call her. We can't get through. There's no signal. And so all of a sudden, 3 hours later, we get through, and her mom starts laughing her head off. But because we couldn't establish the tone that it was a joke, right? If she had called and left a message, we would have been
there's
like,
no tone. is there?
There's no tone. And so we got in an embarrassing
Speaking of lack of tone, I'm told now that my derp post has been retweeted multiple times.
It's a meme.
I've created a derp storm on the Twitter.
That's why derp is a meme. It just, you hear it and you just start going with it.
And people are saying, this week in derp, derp, herp, derp, derp. Look at all these derps. And it's all because of me. Actually, it's all because of you. I blame you, Andrew.
Well, you typed it in.
I was the moron that did it. I don't know if it's good or bad, but I have derped.
No, it's awesome.
I have Scott Johnson will be happy, they say. It's a 4chan, apparently, so I'm now part of that crew. Maybe I'll put some fuzzy kittens up and then everything will be better. Andrew, I'm so glad to see you here.
Thanks for coming up. When I look back once again, I mean, this is like the biggest opportunity I find in this medium.
We're lucky. I really love what we're doing. Yeah. I feel a kindred spirit in you and Amber and all the people who are doing this kind of stuff. It's so early days. We're not at each other's throats. We're just going, come on.
Like going along.
Except for that son of a bitch, Jason. But other than him.
True. This is true. It's pretty. Don't get me started.
Jason. Well.
Actually, shall we?
No. That's another. Yeah, Nazis, zombies, angry birds,
derp,
and Calacanis. And we covered it all. So nice to have you up here. Andrew is at rocketboom.com. That's also, there's a link there to knowyourmeme.com. And Magma is a great site if you want to see what's hot in the internet video. MAG.MA. Magma. Thank you so much to see you. Amber MacArthur, great to see you. You don't make it to Twit very often. I'm glad you could be here.
I'm very happy to be here. I've learned a lot. Derp.
I think we have a show title, by the way. I don't think there's any question at all
what the
name of this show is. Amber is at ambermac.com. You can find her on Twitter under that moniker. You can also find her on commandn.tv, her weekly video show, which is fantastic. And on CP24 Web Nation. And don't forget Net at Night, which is a great show that Amber does every Tuesday with me at 1:30 Pacific, 4:30 Eastern at live.twit.tv. Or you can subscribe to it and get it forever and ever at Twit. And her book, Power Friending,
is on bookstores. Thanks, Leo.
Is it selling well? Are you doing well with this?
Yes, I can say.
Are you making?
Yeah, I am. I just made it to the Globe and Mail bestsellers list not that long ago, so that's pretty cool. So it's been really a fun process, and it's gotten me lots more speaking gigs. But Leo, who cares about me? Happy birthday!
Oh, thank you. I think we'll call it Happy Derp Day.
Oh, that's good.
Thank you, Amber. Yeah, great book, Power Friending, highly recommended. And last but not least, Dwight Silverman. Thank you for being here. Dwight rearranged his camera shot. So it looks so much better, he tells me.
Derp.
Yeah.
Dwight's link roll is an absolute must read on his blog at blogs.cron.com/techblog. And of course, you can read him in the Houston Chronicle. Thank you for being here. And
I really enjoy getting a chance to meet you, Amber and Andrew. I both have liked the stuff you've done over the years. And it's great to get a chance to meet you virtually via Skype.
Thanks so much.
That's awesome. What Twit is all about, is getting together just really great people in the industry so we can sit around and chat. We are doing a best of show this year. Instead of getting together after the Christmas holiday, I want to take that day off, Boxing Day. So if you would like to help us with that, it's very simple. Go to twit.tv/best of and nominate your favorite bits or episodes from the past year, and we'll chop it all up and put it all together and make a best of Twit salad. That's twit.tv/best of. I also want to point you we're going to do a special. We sent Sarah Lane down to Los Angeles to do a special on the new Tron movie. And she went down to Digital Domain and saw the special effects and how it was made and so forth. And that's going to debut at November 30th, Tuesday on Twit. Do you know when, Eileen, it's going to debut? Well, it'll be out. There's a little sample right now on our Twit specials feed. 5 p.m. Pacific, 8 p.m. Eastern, live.twit.tv for that special. Eileen, is there anything else I need to do that I have left out? Anything else I have to say? All right. No.
Actually, do you mind if I pitch in something?
Please, Andrew.
I was just thinking about what we just witnessed there with the Oprah audience. And, you know, I started off talking about your audience. And I actually kind of would compare them a little bit. But the thing that's neater about your audience that I like that was so clear to me when we saw it was that Oprah has wound up with this audience that seems as if they're just sponges waiting to soak up anything without being critical about anything. I've never seen anybody do any criticism, you know, with the audience or any of the commentary. It's always just, oh, I love you. I love you. Right. But I feel like your audience, which, you know,
I could use a little more. Respect, I could use a little more of that, by the way.
That they have not that they criticize you, but that they jump into the conversation and with their criticism on the topics.
Right.
And so,
no, I do. I like an audience that's crunchy, chewy, yeah. That pushes back, and
who that's wants just people who just soak it up, whatever you say, kind of.
Well,
it's anyway, it's not.
It might
as
be
nice.
Okay. No, I'm just kidding. I couldn't agree more. I think that's one of the best things about the internet audience is that they do push back, they do participate, they're in there, and they have some skin in the game. I won't be here, by the way, next week. Tom Merritt will be filling in for me. I'm going to be in Paris for Le Web. I'm looking forward to that. Thank you, Louis, for inviting me to that. And I'll be back a week from Sunday for Twit. And, of course, a week from Tuesday for all the regular shows at live.twit.tv. Thank you for joining us one more time. Let's just watch people go crazy as they get their iPad. This just to make sure that the YouTube really does pull this video down.
It allows you to think about a lot of things and to clear channel for giving to others. So how about we meditate on this?
Oh, they went crazy because she took off her dress. What the hell?
I think it's the wrong episode.
What is that?
This is an old Christmas show, I think, Leo.
Oh, this is something different. This isn't her. This isn't her current favorite things.
Yeah, I don't think so.
What, did they win a car?
Oh, this was the car one.
Must have been the car.
Yeah.
Well, it's pretty much the same reaction.
It's iPad, pretty much the same thing.
iPad car. Huh? They got Volkswagen Beetles.
They already did that? Wow.
Mm-hmm.
It didn't make the news, I guess, this time.
Watch Oprah's Ultimate Favorite Things.
Or didn't make my radar.
Announced that the surprise to her audience. It doesn't actually say in this Gawker post why they're going crazy. It's just her ultimate favorite thing. So that wasn't this year. That was another year?
I don't think so. I think she's wearing a gold dress. Sorry, and I probably am the only one who noticed that.
Thank you, Amber.
That's why you need ladies on the show, Leo.
I need more ladies on the show. No, they say that's the right episode. I don't know.
Oh, somebody's saying Oprah did two gifts or something, I guess, or two.
She did two.
Things.
Oh, she did 2 days two of it, I think, things. Maybe. That yeah.
Was, okay. Maybe the car was the other fave.
Oh, wow.
So somebody's done an interesting meme video of this. Bees! Bees! Ah! 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 Bees! Ah!
I like that
one. Oh, my God, there's bees in here! Oh! Let them out! Oh, bees! You know, it's pretty much the same reaction. I'm getting stung to death! Oh, my God! Oh, my God! Oh, my God!
And she's the queen bee.
Oh, no, bees.
That's just weird.
I just cut all that crap out, and I'll say, another twit this is in the can. Me. See you later. Bees! And we may do an unofficial, I might do an unofficial Paris something. Not Coronet.
Can you say on the air where you're staying at CES? Would you rather not?
No, we're right next door at the Renaissance.
I got it.
That's where I always stay. I always stay at the Renaissance if I can.
I like the Riviera. I'm at the Riviera. The helicopter has landed.
Okay. Yeah, this is like Twit 57. There's something about Amber and Andrew Barron together.
You killed Leo.
Another twit is in the can. Have I told you about Ford lately? Jesus. Carbonite Pro. Great stuff. Get it. CarbonitePro.com. 30 days free. Go to meeting. Fantastic. Get it. 30 days free. Go to meeting.com/twit. Drive a Ford. Great stuff. Twit Ford thing, whatever it's called. TwitFordFocus.com. Go there. Okay. Good night, everybody. Bye-bye. Best twit ever.
You ought to put that out as like a separate twit.
I think we will.
And just do that as like a, if we
this
ever get.
This is Twit. This Week in Tech, episode 276, recorded November 28th, 2010. Leo loses it. Up next, the Gilmore Gang. Yeah. Oh, my God. Amber.
She know that's what it's doing?
She looks so peaceful. She looks so peaceful sitting there. She's not going to do anything. She's just sitting there. Yes! Hello! Hello! Pretty lady! Ay, ay, ay. By the way, remember when I told you, Eileen, that we didn't have Amber on Twit anymore because the Skype was always terrible? Remember I told you that? No, she does a show every Tuesday. It's fine.